Good day and welcome to the quarterly EN call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rob Path. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining us on this quarterly all EN call. We're glad that you could take some time out and join us today. As always, we have a lot of information to share. I'll get right into our initial greeting, and we want to welcome our new ENs who have joined us in the program over the last quarter since our last call. Welcome to this call. We appreciate having you participate, and we look forward to your active engagement. First thing I wanted to address is to let everyone know that we are engaged in our site visits. We conduct EN site visits on an annual basis, and that's dependent on the availability of budgeted money to do so. This has been something that we initiated about 3 years ago and have been able to conduct these annually. Our interest is to evaluate how your organization is doing in the program. Some interesting things. I was in Indiana last week conducting multiple site reviews. We do these with SSA staff and our partners at Ticket Program Manager who provide support and assistance as well. Couple of things we want to highlight and make sure that you're aware of that we're going to be checking, and some things that we, I would say, frequently run into is, you know, some issues that we see. We want to remind you that, first of all, suitability. This is a constant reminder that we give to employment networks, and that is if your staff is working with SSA beneficiaries to talk about the Ticket to Work program, and particularly in the process of assigning a ticket and working with them and providing employment supports, we have to emphasize that these folks have to have suitability. We also want to remind you that, you know, we'll check your records and take a look at your IWPs while we're on site as well, ask you how things are going. We want to make sure that you're providing the best services and supports possible to our beneficiaries. And we address any issues while we're on site. It's part of this is for us to provide oversight, and the other part is for us to provide support to ENs and offer ideas and suggestions to improve performance moving forward. So we appreciate the hospitality that you frequently give to us when we arrive on these site visits. And we obviously we're interested in what you do, and we want to know what's happening out there and what issues you're encountering. So just a brief update on that. We will be conducting these throughout the remainder of the fiscal year, which will take us from now through the end of September 2019. Once that stops, we will be in a pattern of waiting to see when we will be budgeted again to conduct next year's visits, assuming that would be the case. So I just want to move from that into a brief update in terms of requirements for employment networks and the issue of ENs with multiple business models. In regards to this, there's a few issues I want to hit on, and I'll hit on these briefly. First of all, the issue arose of where we identified that ENs were operating separate business models under one ticket program agreement. So, for example, an EN may be a traditional EN, you know, providing traditional services to beneficiaries, but also may be serving in an administrative functional role with another organization, providing employment services to beneficiaries through that organization, and not have a DUNS number registered with us to for us to track how that organization is doing. So there's a disconnect there, right? So what we identified as a need programmatically was that we needed ENs who were either operating under two models to get a second DUNS for the model that we do not have an agreement with them for, okay? So if you are a traditional and we have you, we have a DUNS for you and an agreement for you, but you are also serving in a maybe an employer EN model or a administrative EN model, and we did not have an agreement with you or a DUNS number, we need to get that resolved, okay? So we're working on instructions for organizations, and these are, we've been fortunate to partner with a few of our EN organizations that have expressed an interest in doing this. And essentially, they have gone through the process and given us the steps necessary to successfully obtain a second DUNS number through Dun & Bradstreet. So what am I talking about when I say a DUNS number? A DUNS number is basically a similar to a social security number for your organization. So, and we need that so that we can track your organization and what's going on with your organization in the Ticket to Work program. So, for example, your traditional EN may have 50 tickets assigned. You obtain a DUNS number for an administrative model where you want to partner with other organizations to help them service beneficiaries in a ticket program, and you make an agreement with those organizations. That's an agreement between yourself, your organization, and their organization. You split the money. What's the financial split going to be, et cetera? And then you assign those tickets through the administrative model. We can track that. We can track the administrative functions and how many tickets are assigned and what's happening with payments for that model, and we can also track it for the traditional model that you have. It's an important element for us for oversight purposes and for us to understand what is happening in the Ticket to Work program for the various organizations and entities providing services in the Ticket to Work program. So it's really important for us from a tracking perspective to have your organization registered with us through the appropriate agreement and have a second DUNS. So we will have those instructions ready and communicated shortly. This is just a heads up for right now that we are compiling this information and training materials, basically screenshots for you to walk through. And we will have that on a call for those organizations that express an interest to us. We are going to set up a March call, and we will notify those organizations. Now, in the meantime, if your organization is interested, now there's no cost to getting a second DUNS. If your organization is interested in getting a second DUNS and operating on a separate model, we encourage you to think about doing this, because the more models we have in the Ticket to Work program, the more flexibility we provide our beneficiaries with services, particularly administrative models. Administrative models can network with other organizations that are providing these services but maybe aren't staffed to actually serve as an EN on their own. Or maybe you're an EN out there operating but having trouble with staffing and so forth, and maybe you'd be a better fit with an admin model. This particular initiative is designed for those ENs who are interested in considering a second option or a different option for a business model for their organization. We've had several ENs express interest in this. We encourage you to consider this. And if you are interested, we ask that you send an email to enoperations@yourtickettowork.gov, at ssa.gov. So let me do that again and not screw it up. Again, it's enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Okay? And so more to come on that. Looking forward to getting some organizations excited and involved in this initiative. So transitioning away from that, I'd like to move into our piece moving forward, and we're going to talk a little bit about something really important, that's beneficiary wage reporting. And I'd like to introduce Kimberly Bolton, who's going to share some really important information with us on this particular issue. You're all aware of how important this is, but I want to emphasize this is a great opportunity for us. Kimberly Bolton's career in SSA began in the Grand Rapids, Michigan field office. She's held the position of service representative and Title 16 claim representative. Her work entailed processing initial claims applications, screening for potential SSA and non-SSA benefit entitlement, processing post-entitlement workload actions as well. Kimberly began working at SSA headquarters in Baltimore in October 2015 as a program analyst in the Office of Electronic Services and Technology. Her workloads include ABLE, MISIX, and currently My Wage Report. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Kimberly Bolton. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rob. So this afternoon, I just want to give you a little background, and as we go through, also on the line is one of my coworkers for My SSA. If there are any questions that come up regarding My SSA during the question and answer period, so just want to make you aware of that. So just some background. Next slide. Excuse me. Just want to give you some background regarding My Wage Report. My Wage Report was developed and designed in response to Section 826 of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. The act mandated that SSA implement a method to allow recipients receiving disability and their representatives a means to electronically report wages and receive a receipt of those wages reported. So today I'll cover telephone wage reporting, mobile wage reporting, who can report wages online, My Wage Report, My Social Security, and just a short demonstration. Please keep in mind that as people use these methods to report, each of these reporting methods, the individual must contact the field office either in person or over the phone to have the record established to allow them to report wages using either of these methods. Next slide, please. Telephone wage reporting, commonly referred to as TWR, allows individuals to call and report wages. They will be calling a designated telephone number established with SSA to report their wages each month. Title 16 and concurrent, which are Title 2 or Title 16 beneficiaries, also referred to as SSDI beneficiaries and SSI beneficiaries, representative payees, parents, spouses, and deemers can use this option to report wages. Reports can be submitted only for the month prior. Wages can be submitted any day during the current reporting month. However, we encourage persons to report wages with the first 6 days of the month to ensure that their checks are correctly issued with those wages processed and factored into that benefit amount. When an individual chooses to participate in TWR, they contact the field office and they're issued a training packet, where the technician will go over that packet with them. Next slide, please. The packet provides them with detailed instructions and also a calendar to report those wages, and I believe there's also a sheet to show them how to calculate their wages. Limitations to telephone wage reporting. The individual can only submit a report if there's only one active employer on the record. So for individuals that have more than one employer that's active on the record for SSA, they cannot use this option. Wage earners or persons with impairment-related work expenses, commonly referred to as IRWIs or blind work expenses, BWIs, cannot use this method to report wages. The caller can only make three attempts in one day to submit a report. Once their three attempts have taken place, they have to call the next day. Institutional and organizational payees cannot use telephone wage reporting. Next slide. Mobile wage reporting, also referred to as MWR. The user will need to download the app either from the Google Play Store for Android users or the Apple App Store for iPhone users. This app functions similarly to the TWR. A receipt is mailed to the recipient or rep payee. A wage report can be submitted on any day during the current month. When an individual chooses to participate in MWR, they also receive a training packet from the field office. Next slide. Limitations with MWR. They cannot report wages for records that require any manual action by the field office representative. They cannot submit reports for records with ERWE or BWE or a plan to achieve self-support established. So if an individual has this plan on record, they cannot use this option to report wages. They cannot submit a report with more than one employer on the MISIX record. The reporter can only make 3 attempts in 1 day to report wages, and again, institutional and organizational payees cannot use this option to report wages. MWR will time out after 10 minutes of inactivity. Next slide. Only the person reporting wages needs a My Social Security account to access the application. The following individuals may report wages online: Social Security disability insurance beneficiary and their representative payees and spouses, SSI recipients, spouses, rep payees, or deemers. Representative payees will not have full access to the beneficiary's information. And again, institutional and organizational representative payees may not report wages online. Next slide. My wage report, often referred to as MyWR. Users are required to have a My Social Security account. T16 users can submit wage reports for the month prior, while Title II or SSDI beneficiaries can submit wage reports for up to 24 past months. Excuse me. Recipients and deemers with multiple employers can report wages. The receipt is stored in our online notice retrieval system. A copy is sent to the recipient and rep payee. When an individual chooses to participate in MyWR, they also receive a training packet from the field office. Next slide. Limitations with MyWR. Individuals with cafeteria plans, which are exclusions that have been established by the IRS, they cannot use this option to report wages. So they can only report the gross amount, not the amount that should be excluded. Persons that have difficulty using a computer or smartphone will not be able to use this option. An individual cannot submit reports for records that require any manual action by the field office. And in order for the employer to display, the field office must have the EIN for that employer on record. So if you have individuals with pay stubs that are going into the office or have contact with the office, because now is a good time for them to take their W-2s to the office and make sure that the office has that information to allow them to enter it in the system so they can begin using MyWR. Next slide. For My Social Security, in order to create a My Social Security account, you must be able to verify information about themselves and the following information. They have to have a valid email address, their Social Security number, the U.S. mailing address, and be at least 18 years of age. The individual can only create an account using their personal information and for their own exclusive use. You cannot create an account on behalf of another person or using another person's information or identity, even if you have that person's written permission. For example, you cannot create a person account for anyone if you have a business relationship, rep payee, or an appointed representative. Next slide. And this is just basic instructions how to establish the My Social Security account. You start by visiting the mysocialsecurity.gov/myaccount. Select Create or Sign In Account. If there is not an account established, select number 3, which is create an account. Number 4, read and agree to the terms of service. Number 5, provide some information about yourself or the individual should provide their information. Number 6 is verify their identity. And number 7 will create the account details. Number 8, select how they want to receive the code, either via phone, text message, or email. Number 9, enter the security code that's received from step number 8. And number 10, they have successfully created their account. Next slide. This is the demo for my wage report and through my Social Security, how to sign in and submit the wages. So this is the sign-in page. They will enter the username and password, and this is the page where they will create an account if they don't have one. Next slide. This is the slide where they will verify their cell phone address, their cell phone number, excuse me, or if the number needs to be changed, and then how they want to receive the security code. Next slide. This is the term of service screen that they would need to read through and agree and click next. Next slide. This is the My Social Security page. And on this page, they have the option to get beneficiary statements, report wages, receive a benefit verification letter, request a replacement Social Security card, or update their profile. Next page. When submitting wages, they will need to choose worker. Either this is for the individual reporting for themselves or for an individual reporting for someone else. They will select the correct option and select next. Next slide, please. They will choose the employer. These are employers where the EIN has been established, and they will select which employer they're submitting wages for. And then click next or exit. Next slide. On this slide, they will select the frequency of pay. Typically, it's going to be weekly, biweekly, monthly. If it's a one-time payment, then it's yearly or daily. And click next. Next slide. And then at this slide, they will enter the pay period start date, month, day, and year, pay period end date, same information, month, day, and year, the gross wage amount before any taxes or deductions, and then the date that the paycheck their pay stub was received, the date that they're paid on, essentially. And click update. Next slide. On this screen, they receive an update. They receive the confirmation that their wages have not yet been submitted, and this is the screen where they're verifying the information. If there's any changes that need to be made, they will click edit. Once they have done that, they will click submit, and they receive the confirmation, are you ready to submit these wages? At that point, they will click submit, or if there's additional wages to be submitted, they can report additional wages or exit. Next slide. This is a receipt and proof of wages that were submitted that's available. They can print these or save them. These receipts can be retrieved later through My SSA. Next slide. And this is My SSA again, but what I want you to see is the second tab, which is the message center. The message center is where the individual will click if they need to retrieve those prior reports or receipts of wages that have been submitted. They can print those at a later time, and they'll see the list of those pay stubs that have been submitted, their receipts that are there. And when they're done, of course, they would click sign out. Next slide. Okay, and I'm off that.
Thank you, Kimberly. Right now, we are going to open the lines for some questions specifically for Kimberly. So, Ian, if you can please open the line.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Take our first question from Stacey Clark of Service Source. Please go ahead.
Oh, hello. Hi, this is Stacey. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I wanted to make sure I was off mute. So I just want to clarify a couple things. This is great information. I have a lot of clients that haven't been reporting this way. They've been trying to do it through the field office, which has been, to be honest, an incredible nightmare because they're not actually, you know, inputting their income in a timely manner. So it sounds like this is going to alleviate that happening to my beneficiaries because they will be responsible for doing it on their own. So to clarify, do they first go to the field office to get permission to be able to do any of these methods, and what is the best method for them to input their wages?
So thank you so much for calling in and with your question. So it would depend on your client's limitations. If they're able to communicate clearly using a smartphone and they don't have any speech impairments or any limitations, then you
okay.
can decide, and as long as they have access to the internet, that's the big piece for my wage report and my Social Security account. But if they just have a minute phone or they're able to go to the library or a tablet or something, then I'm going to leave that up to your discretion. But definitely in order for
okay.
them to report their wages, using one of these options, yes, they have to contact the field office first. So the field office can establish the record and give them the training packet, which is the reporting instructions. There's also the calendar, so they know that they should report within the first 6 days if possible for the prior month's wages. And they also want to make sure that the EIN is on the record because the EIN is required for those employers to show in my wage report.
Right. Okay, because I don't know why, but I thought before this was, and maybe I was completely told wrong by a field office, that this was only available for SSI, not SSDI recipients. But it sounds like that is false, that the SSDI recipients could also do the phone app if they have access to the right proper equipment as well. Is that's correct?
Correct.
Yes.
So it is for,
okay.
We call them SSI and SSDI or Title II and Title 16 or persons receiving both benefits. So they do have the
right.
option of reporting wages using either
okay.
of these options.
Okay, because, yeah, my only one SSI person I have, yeah, it is able to do that. So I totally know what you're talking. He got the packet, and he loaded it on his phone, and it works perfectly. But, okay, so go ahead. Someone was saying something.
This is Laura Rodriguez. I was going to
uh-huh.
also mention that if your beneficiaries do go to the field office to, you know, if they need to enter in the EIN or anything, they can also ask the field office to help start them set up a My Social Security account. So the field
okay.
office can do that with them, and it helps to kind of cut down on some of the issues that some people do run into. So when they
mm-hmm.
go to the field office to start creating that account, then they'll get an activation code letter, and then they can go set it up online later on.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And the agent at the field office should be able to help them with that, you're saying?
Well, many of
the
field offices have self-help PCs. So that allows a person to go in and set up the MySSA account that Laura was referring to. So they can
okay.
also go into many of the offices to do that with them, and the technicians
okay.
are there to assist them with that as well.
Okay. So are you guys encouraging this for all beneficiaries that are able to do this for their reporting? Is this the best method?
Yes, we're encouraging those who are able to use this method to report wages, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
The options are there,
yeah.
and we're working
yeah.
to add additional enhancements and features, and we definitely want more people to take advantage of it.
So,
right, because all, yeah, yeah, so I'm happy, yeah, because at this point, I don't know how it is across the nation, but the field offices in my areas, they just haven't been inputting the paper pay stubs that they've been sending in at all. So what's happening is the systems are completely not updated with the current wage information, and it's just, yeah, it's just not a good thing. So if this is a proper way to do it, as long as the beneficiaries are able to do what you're saying, it loads it right into the system, correct? So the field offices can see that.
You might want to repeat that last part, and then we're going to have to move to the next question, if you don't mind. Go ahead and repeat
Absolutely.
That last.
Oh, no, that's fine. I said I just wanted to make sure once the beneficiary is able to do this, input it, and or the field office is able to see all that income as well on the system.
Yeah, so once they have input the information and reported those wages, then the technician is able to go through and update the record. And it's definitely more timely with the number of people the field offices are trying to service and the changing workloads for everyone, the reduced staff, et cetera. So it's just it's another process, and it is time-consuming. So we're definitely encouraging people to use this option to ensure that their wages are reported timely.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your question. And I know that you got several questions on the chat, but we are going to have time for one question, John, from the chat, please, for Kimberly.
All right. So our first question comes from Myra, who asks, do both SSI and SSDI beneficiaries need to report their spouse's income as well?
For SSI, yes. SSDI, the spouse, if it's concurrent, if they're receiving both Title II and Title 16 benefits, the spouse does need to report. But if it's definitely SSI, so if it's Title II or SSDI only, no, they don't necessarily need to report those wages.
Okay, thank you for that. And we need to continue with the agenda, but we know that there's more questions for them. We're going to collect them. And see, we have more time to have a little bit more time towards the end.
Yeah, there's some of the Q&A.
We're going to move to a presentation from Heather Miller. She's from Easter Seals, Nebraska. She's going to talk today about supporting ticket holders to prevent and manage overpayments. Heather serves as the Ticket to Work Program Manager for Nebraska Ticket to Work Program with Easter Seals. It's a nonprofit disability service organization. She is certified CP Week and SIHIIP counselor, and she has served Nebraskans with disabilities for the past 6 years.
And she is also in one of our site review recipients. I remember seeing her.
All the way out in rural Nebraska, Rob. You never thought you'd come out there, did you?
I tell that story all the time about coming out and seeing you, and that was something I don't think I will ever forget. I thought Nebraska was a fantastic state.
It's not so fantastic right now with all the snow, but normally, yes, it is.
We only do our visits to Nebraska in, like, July or something. So.
That's a great idea. I recommend it. Well, thanks for having me on the call today. I sure appreciate it. And I was going to just touch on some things that are good in terms of working and coaching with your clients to get those wages reported and to prevent overpayments and stuff like that. I feel like the most important number one thing we can do to help our clients that we serve is get a jump on it at the get-go when they're assigning their tickets, figure out where they are with their work incentives, what work incentives they have available to them. We all know sometimes they know, sometimes they think they know what work incentives are available, and they may not. So if you're not someone who can navigate that field with Social Security, remember you have a state WIPA, which should hopefully be able to help you in identifying where exactly these beneficiaries are with their work incentives, so we know if we need to go quickly or if we've got some time to get those reports in. Let's see here. What can we do to coach and support them? I know sometimes beneficiaries are afraid to report because they're just afraid of what's going to happen, and it's stressful for them, but understanding that it's something they have to do. If they don't do it, it's eventually going to catch up to them anyway, which is going to be a whole nother situation they have to go through. And then helping them understand when we expect or anticipate that benefit check to stop. so that they can be watching the bank account, watching their deposits to see, you know, did it go in this month, did it not, working directly with their local field office is also a great way to do this. If you've got a contact at your local field offices where your clients are, or a work incentive liaison at that office, they have always been extremely helpful to us in getting checks stopped and benefits stopped and things like that. Should one of your beneficiaries get overpaid, the most important thing I tell my folks is don't spend the money. Don't spend the money because you're going to have to pay it back eventually. I have some clients that want to just immediately write a check to Social Security and send it back to Social Security, and I encourage them not to do that. Wait until that overpayment letter comes out, and then we address it. We don't want to just blindly send a check off to Social Security. They're not, it's not going to work out how they think it's going to work out. So waiting for that overpayment letter to come in, not getting discouraged because it does happen, and it's hard for an agency as large as Social Security Administration to stop every benefit check exactly when they're supposed to stop that benefit check. It's just too large of an organization to count on that 100% of the time. So we've got to be on top of the reporting, working with the local offices, staying in really good contact. If you're not someone who can navigate it with your state WIPA that's working with your clients and helping them understand keeping good, organized files with pay stubs, files with the letters they've gotten from Social Security. And now with all these great options of reporting on the phone, online, through your MySSA account, there's just so many options out there for people that, you know, we should be cracking down on those overpayments. So overall, I don't want to spend too much time on this. Number one, finding out from the get-go where they are and when you anticipate that check stopping from the get-go so that you know what you're working with, and then just encouraging them to report. I sometimes report for some of my folks, and sometimes they can handle that on them on their own. That's up to you as an employment network or VR how you want to handle that. But staying in contact with that local office, getting that information there, making sure even if it needs to be reported multiple times, is important in cutting back on those overpayments. That's pretty much just the gist of it there, and I'll turn it back over to you. If anyone has questions, I'd be more than happy to address that.
So, well, thank you. This is not Anna. This is Rob. But thank
or
you,
Rob.
And I just want to emphasize the point of you know how your EN provides benefits counseling services, and the importance of that in the program, particularly for ENs that are in an area servicing beneficiaries where access to the WIPA may not be as available as we would like. We know that we've had a decrease in the number of projects over the years, and this is just a commercial reminder that we are encouraging ENs that would like to add this particular feature as part of the services they provide to beneficiaries, that we are emphasizing the availability of training, free training through Virginia Commonwealth for certification as a community partner work incentive specialist. That it's an on-site free training. They are spread out throughout the country. You can, again, send any questions about participating to enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov if you think you have staff or yourself that would be interested in receiving this certification. But these are, if it's not the most important services you can give a beneficiary, it's among the most important at least. So please consider that, and that's my only piece to that. And thank you very much, Heather, for that excellent presentation. And we'll go ahead and take a couple questions.
Sure. Ian, can you please open the line for questions for Heather?
Of course. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press *1. We'll take our first question from Scott Schneider of Career Source Palm Beach County. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. My question was for the previous speaker, so I didn't have a question regarding overpayment, so I'm okay.
Thank you.
I
Is there any other questions?
Star one, if you'd like to ask a question. It appears we have, oh, sorry, my apologies. We'll now take our first question from Liam Alves of America Works of New York. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'll put this question in the chat, but I was just wondering, I know that we're always encouraged to tell clients to report their wages to the SSA, just as we do, but they ask me this all the time. What is the reason that we both have to report wages? Like, say, if we submit their pay stubs for the billing, why the SSA doesn't have that already registered in their system? If that makes sense.
I could answer that from the EN standpoint. Why? I often tell my clients, because they do feel like, well, I'm already reporting to Social Security, and I'm sending these to our Health and Human Services. Why do I have to send them to you? And my response is, whenever a crisis happens or something really big happens, it seems like the most important thing I need to figure it out for the client is their pay stubs and work history. So if I've got all that as time goes on and you're sending it to me every month, then when things come up, you know, with a potential overpayment or they are due a check, I've already got all the background information I need to help them through that. And that way we don't have to go back a year or 6 months and try to dig up pay stubs. So from the EN standpoint, that's what I tell my clients.
Yeah, and I would just add a quick blurb to that, that we, for the submission of pay stub earnings into the portal, into the, what is it, the ITOPS portal, I believe, is
the ticket portal.
The ticket portal, thank you. It will generate, it will show in our system faster than reporting through into the field office. So the earnings that we are reporting or recording are going right into eWork, which is a euphemism, but it's a more direct reporting mechanism. So that's an additional benefit as well. Thank you.
Is there any other question, Ian?
It's star one if you'd like to ask a question, but at this time we have no further questions.
John, do you have a question in the chat?
Oh, sorry about that. It doesn't look like we do directly for this presenter.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to continue with our agenda. Ms. Kara Kaplan.
Good afternoon, everybody. I want to touch on a couple subjects. First, the APOR. So as you know, all ENs must complete the APOR by Thursday, February 28th, with the exceptions of VRs or VRENs, AJCs, workforces. If your contract date is 2018, so January 1st, 2018 or later, you would not have to complete it this year. For everybody else, however, if you do not complete it, your EN will be placed on hold, and that includes ticket assignments and payments, and then there could be a possible termination. February 28th is coming upon us next week, so please make sure you get your APOR in. Every year, we terminate between 20 and 30 EN, so we do not like to do that. Links were sent Friday, February 1st. If you still do not have your link, please contact SSAENAPOR at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And then along with that same genre, the security awareness training also must be completed by February 28th, and it will result in the same thing, hold on payments, ticket assignments, and possible terminations if we do not get it. All ENs must submit an addendum to security awareness training 222 at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. The 222 should be signed by all employees involved in ticket, regardless of suitability, and kept on site. Please only submit the addendum to the inbox. The exception for this is ENs who only have one person working with them. Then you can submit the 222. The actual 222 cannot be signed electronically. The addendum, however, must be signed electronically. If your portal access is in jeopardy of being shut down at the time of submitting your forms, please note that in the body of the email, and we will get to those immediately. Do not submit your forms to EN Service. This will delay your processing. Okay, so ePay, I'm going to move on to that. We're currently about 20% of our way through the current eBay file. Because of the size of the file, it could take us up to another 4 months to complete the file. If you don't want to wait that long, you can always request payments through the portal, and those payments are made within 30 days. And also, everybody who has been taken off of ePay has been notified. The only exception is if we are currently auditing your AN, and if that's happening, you know about it. I also want to remind you about, because we've gotten a lot of these questions lately, about VR involvement with EN payments. So if there is a successful closure with the VR agencies, we will not make phase one payments. Also, if there's an unsuccessful closure, however, we paid the VR cost reimbursement prior to the EN requesting a phase one payment, phase ones are off the table for those as well. And that is all I have. I'll hand it back to you, Anna.
Thank you, Kara. And we have Jamie Pendergraft from TPM to provide some outreach updates.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Anna. This is Jamie Pendergraft. I'm the Ticket Program Outreach Manager, and I just wanted to talk about a couple of new things that have come out recently. One of them is actually directly related to today's presentations, and we wanted to share that we've published a new fact sheet about preventing and managing overpayments. And I will ask John to tweet out that or to chat out that link to everyone in the audience. This fact sheet is beneficiary-facing and gives some information on what an overpayment is and what they can do to prevent them from happening. And it also goes into some detail on what happens if you have been overpaid and how they can manage the overpayment. We also have a second new fact sheet that just came out today. It's called Presenting Your Best Self to Employers, and it provides a variety of resume and interview tips. And those of you on our Gov Delivery distribution list should have received some information about that fact sheet this morning. And we do have some sample social media posts in there for you all to share if you would like to share that on your Facebook and Twitter accounts. The next subject I'd like to touch on is our next WISE event. Our next WISE is scheduled for next Wednesday, February 27th at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. The topic is on debunking the three biggest myths about disability and work, and we've sent out a couple of announcements to you all about that, again, with some sample social media posts in there. WISE webinars are a really good way for a large audience to learn a lot about Ticket to Work at one time. So we do encourage you to share information about the webinars with your audience, and we would also love it if you joined us for our webinars. The next item I'd like to talk about is one of our recent success stories. We published a story about Brenda last month, who was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. And she spent nearly a decade learning how to manage the symptoms of that mental illness. Once she found the right combination of treatments and strategies for her, she felt she was ready to work, and she's now employed as a community rehab worker, where she applies her human service skills to helping vulnerable populations transition from a group home setting and into the community. Brenda's story is just one of the many examples of success stories published on our website, and I do encourage you to go and check those out. You're also able to contact me if you have an idea for a success story. As a reminder, all success story candidates do have to be reviewed and vetted by Social Security, but if you do have a potential lead, feel free to reach out, and we will start the process. The next item I wanted to share was that we do publish a monthly Career Fairs blog post. Recently, a few of you have reached out to see if career fairs you are participating in could be included in our blogs. We do have a form for you to fill out to determine if your career fair can be included. And if you contact me, I'll be happy to send the form to you if you have some information about an upcoming career fair. And lastly, I've encouraged you to contact me several times. Again, this is Jamie Pendergraft. I can be reached by email at ssamarketing@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. If you have any ideas for content, if you'd like to volunteer to present on a WISE webinar, or you have any thoughts on any of the outreach materials we distribute, feel free to reach out. And with that, I will turn it back to Anna.
Thank you, Jamie. And before we open up for questions, we know that there are, at least in the chat, several questions about the DONS requirement. And we will have this call in March exactly to clarify all the questions that you may have. It is not a requirement. It is something that you can do if you are interested in adding a secondary business model to your organization.
Correct. And again, emphasis is, if you are currently operating under one TPA, but you are providing services as, for example, you are under a TPA as a traditional EN, but you're also providing services in an administrative fashion, we want that organization to get the second DUNS or to stop operating and just operate under the traditional model that they have an agreement with. Mm-hmm. We will also have additional directions and instructions associated with this that we will share with those organizations that are interested in this whole issue of getting a second DUNS in the March meeting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we also have Kimberly Bolton with us, so you can ask questions to any of the presenters. I know Heather is still on the line, or questions directly to SSA. So, Ian, can we please open up the line?
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one. Take the first question from Susan Webb of Ability 360. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Can I ask Kara to remind us again about ePay? I know that me and a lot of my friend ENs are really slow at getting payments right now. And I'm talking about payments with primary evidence, not necessarily to do with ePay. And I'm curious because you said that payments are being made within 30 days. And we've got an awful lot that are in the allowed and pending stage. We sent pay subs and they should be paid but aren't. And one of my friends said that when he checked into his, he was told that the payments are slow because you're prioritizing ePays first, and yet you're saying it's still going to be another 4 months before those are all caught up. Can you enlighten me?
Yeah, Susan, we're not prioritizing ePay. That's not true. So I don't know who told you that.
Okay.
But there should be no payment request accompanied by a pay stub that takes more than 30 days. And we do have Maximus payment staff on the phone. Kimberly, you may want to chime in. I don't believe any payment that's requested through the portal that is accompanied by evidence has taken more than 30 days.
And hi,
okay,
yes,
well,
you're
that's
correct, Kara. This is Kimberly. Hi, Susan. And yes, just to reiterate what Kara said, yeah, we are not prioritizing ePay cases. And
okay,
if you have submitted payment requests with evidence of earnings or even without, those cases are processed within 30 days. And just remember that process means that the case is either paid, denied, or placed in diary. So if there are some cases that you've requested or payments you've requested and you have not received payment, let's just make sure that it's not currently in a diary status.
What does diary status mean?
That means there's some information that we need to complete the process. So it's
okay.
There's some type of review that may need to go from SSA, or there's some needed information that we need in order for us to complete the process of payment.
Okay. So what if they're allowable? Does that, we've got a whole bunch of them that are just sitting there and allowable, And again, it's not just me. I'm hearing this from some really large ENs that their revenues are way, way down. Is this something that there was like a short burp there somewhere and you're catching up, or, you know, what's actually going on?
So when you say, so when you're looking in the portal, you said you're seeing the status of allowable?
Mm-hmm. Allowed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Allowed. Okay, I may have to defer that to someone at SSA. I'm not sure what that status actually would mean.
That means you, from what I understand, that means that you've determined that it's a valid payment, just hasn't been paid yet. And we've got more sitting in allowed than we've actually been paid.
Okay.
Hi, this is Kara. I'd have to check with our systems people, but I've never heard allowed before either.
Oh, my goodness.
But it could be that Maximus has actually made the payment and it's awaiting Treasury.
We'll have to check in that because we don't have the money. That's what I'm saying. And that's
if you could send me a screen. See, we don't go into the portal. SSA can't see the portal and neither can Maximus. So if you could send me a screenshot of that would be great.
What I will do, we get it directly out of the portal. There's a report you can run. And I had my billing person just do it this morning. So what I'm going to do after I get off here is I will send you that spreadsheet. It's got all the reference numbers and everything on it. We get that directly out of the portal. And like I say, I know it's not just me. One of the very largest ENs, you know, emailed me and he said, Susan, we're way down. You know what's going on. So it's not just me. It's quite a few ENs. So if you could check that out, it surely would be appreciated by a bunch of us.
Yep, no problem.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Susan. Ian, do we have another question?
Yes, we'll now take our next question from Gregory Stone of AmeriForce Personnel. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. My question also relates to the ePay presenter, where you stated that ePay will certainly, you know, not pay phase one milestones had there been a successful VR closure. I would assume everyone knows. However, you followed that up by stating that had there been an unsuccessful closure, yet payments had been made under the cost reimbursement program, then that also impacts the payment of phase one milestones. Can you elaborate on that just a bit?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know how much I can elaborate. I'm just saying that if it's an unsuccessful closure, you have to remember when VR closes the case, it's only 3 months, you know, after the services. They're guessing if this person's going to get to 9 months of SGA. Sometimes they guess right, sometimes they don't. And if they guess that it's an unsuccessful closure, but the person does get to 9 months of SGA, and they then submit for a cost reimbursement prior to an EN getting paid, then we will make that cost reimbursement, and we will consider that a successful closure. I mean, we paid them. So we're not going to pay two entities for the same period is what it is. But, however, if you request the payment prior to the VR, then we will pay you, and they won't get paid. But we're not going to pay two entities.
Definitely no. But is there, and I would assume not, is there any way, for instance, at the point of ticket assignment where you go in and say, I want to sign this ticket, you know, show me what you have, portal, and the portal just states it's an unsuccessful VR closure, the only thing you would actually have as a hint would be a very, very recent unsuccessful DRS closure, okay? Whether that was maybe payable, maybe not. Am I correct in that?
Yes, you are.
Okay, very well. Okay.
I know it's there's no way we can, you know, program the system otherwise. And I know it seems like a disadvantage. But you would still get your phase two and outcome payments. It's not like you don't get paid. It's just the phase ones that are off the table.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Ian, do we have another question?
Yes. We'll take our next question from Deborah Tennessee of Maximus. Please go ahead.
Hi, Deborah. I don't have a question. I just want to respond to the question that Susan Webb asked asked about allowed payments. I just want to confirm that allowed payments means that Maximus paid the claim through the system. It's on a file to Treasury, but Treasury has not cleared that payment yet.
Thanks, Deborah.
You're welcome.
Let's go to the chat. John, can you read us a couple of questions from the chat?
Absolutely. Our first question comes from Lauren Womack, who asks, do you visit AJC locations as well? This is in reference to site visits.
Site visits.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah, we do. And I can think of one that I visited in South Carolina a few years back. But, yes, absolutely. Any entity that is under agreement with us, whether it's workforce, whether it's Centers for Independent Living, whether it's another
goodwill.
Nonprofit, a Goodwill, et cetera, all are, we try to visit a sample of all, and we will get to everyone at some point. I know we're going to try to do 40 or more this year, so we will get to you. I'm hoping, if we haven't seen you yet. Thank you.
All right. And our next question comes from Carrie Daniels, who asks, how will we know when we have a site visit?
We give you advance notification. Someone will send you an email. I think our EN services
mm-hmm.
Folks will send out an email to let you know and give you advance heads up.
Go ahead, John.
Right. And then it looks like we've had multiple questions regarding the Dunn situation. And rather than reading them all out loud, one of the points of clarification that we keep getting is whether or not the multiple DUNs applies to existing ENs that currently already have more than one business model.
If they have more than one business model, but they only have one DUNs, yes, they will need to get another DUNs for that other business model.
All right. And then I'll skip on to our next question, who comes from Sandra, who asks, actually, our next question is going to come from Teresa, who asks, regarding unassigned clients, the 12 within 18 months, do we have 18 months to submit all billing, even during ticket assignment, or do we have the 24 months to bill through unassignment date?
That sounds like we need more clarification, maybe?
Or, Kara, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, hi, John.
Yeah,
could you repeat the question?
Absolutely. So regarding unassigned clients, the 12 within 18 months, do we have 18 months to submit all billing, even during ticket assignment, or do we have 24 months to bill through unassignment?
Okay, let me try to break that question down. When a ticket has been unassigned, so we're talking about unassigned tickets, the ticket is unassigned by the beneficiary, then if the EN is going to request a payment, they'll have to submit certification of services. And they may be eligible up to 12 payments, and they'll have 18 months to submit those payments. If the ticket is still assigned to an EN and they're submitting for payments, they have to submit claims within 24 months. So within 24 months for when the payment or when the earnings, when the beneficiary reached the earnings or the milestone amount. I don't know if that makes sense. Kara, you might want to help me out here, but I think.
Yeah, it's fine.
Right, because they mentioned unassignment and 12 to 18 months, within 18 months, but they also mentioned the 24 months, so it's a little different.
Right, it's two separate things. So if a ticket's unassigned, you have 12 months to request the payment. Well, really, We will only pay up to 12 payments within 18 months of ticket unassignment. So if a beneficiary unassigns a ticket, let's just say January 1st, we'll only pay up to 12 more payments, and you have, and it could be going backwards, it could be going forward. So we'll only pay up through December of this year, and you have 18 months to request that. If 18 months passes, we're not going to pay anything. So if you have a ticket that's unassigned, my advice is to request a payment immediately, get that cost in there, and the maximum staff will determine how many of those 12 payments you're entitled to. Is that clear as mud?
Yeah, thank you. And I guess for the person that asked that question, if they need follow-up, please contact the EM Payments Help Desk, and somebody will assist you. So, Ian, do we have a question on the line?
Yes, ma'am. We'll take our next question from Trina Piazza of Ticket to Work Services. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Trina from Ticket to Work Services. And now I had sent an email about the priority of e-pay that I think Susan was talking about earlier. And I specifically asked what the priority was when processing payment requests, because the last EN call we had, it was clear that there's ENs. Some had said that they haven't received any payment since June when the last e-pay ran. So my question was, we're submitting pay stubs, we're doing all the work, and when I asked what the priority was, I got an answer back that said ePay is the priority when ePay file is distributed. So what happens is normally when there's no ePay, things are taking maybe 2-3 weeks, but now they're taking the 30 days to go from pending to allowed, and then up to another 8 days to get actually paid. So I think that
Trina, this is Kara. ePay is not the priority, so I don't know who told you that.
And Payments Help Desk.
Well, they shouldn't be telling you that because that's not true. Kimberly is the manager over that. She can verify this. Whenever you submit a payment request, that always takes priority. And you are getting it within the 30 days. I know sometimes it's faster than other times, depending on workloads, which, is great when it's
being done that it takes. It's like they're waiting like till the 29th or the 30th day to move it from pending to allowed. And then it's taking another up to eight business days for it to actually, for us to see the deposits. So it's almost taking close to 40 days for a payment process to go through from pending to paid, not pending to allowed.
Right, and the 30 days is how long it takes us to process it. We have no control over how long it takes Treasury to do their part. They're a different agency. So we have no control. But I guarantee you the people who are waiting for ePay and choose not to submit through the portal, they could be waiting another 4 months for a payment. You're not going to wait 4 months if you request it.
Right, I understand. And then I also asked a question is there anybody who's familiar with the portal? Because I know a lot of you don't see it.
None of us see it.
Okay.
This is Heather. I'm pretty familiar with the portal.
Okay, so there's a, when you look at somebody's ticket assignment, track this, it shows you whether or not they've had earnings in the last 24 months, and it'll say, so many months over trial work level and so many months over SGA. Is there a way to get that field in a report? Because I think when there's changes, that to me, for people in outcome that no longer send us their pay stubs, they send updates or they've opted out of quarterly updates, they just don't want anything to do with us anymore, but they're in like outcome 20 and they've asked not to be contacted anymore. Would it be possible to get that information in a report somewhere? Because that's key to billing, to knowing when something's changed in the portal, that there would be an indicator that there's established earnings.
I don't, you're talking about in the ticket status section?
Mm-hmm.
Where you go to see who they're assigned to, that section?
Right, when you go up and see their ticket assignment, there's a thing, it says if there's earning, and you see it when they're assigned to you, and it changes. And that's usually a really
I have never been able to match what has said on there with what I have
for earnings evidence.
Right,
just
but that's
you, from my
usually,
standpoint, it's never matched.
Yeah.
I don't know of any
indicator.
Report you can run.
Yeah, I didn't know if they could add it to the, you know, because it's a field that's there. I just didn't know if they could add it when you run your list of ticket assignments.
Oh, yeah, that'd probably be the software folks behind the scene.
Right, that's what I mean.
I don't know of any way to do it, though.
Yeah. Because that would be very helpful information because to check it, to see, I have to go into each person individually and see if something
right.
has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know it would be so much. Mm-hmm. And that might help people who are weight only relying on ePay. That was just one of my worries is, you know, these ePay files
I
are so
point.
Big because people are waiting
mm-hmm.
on ePay, whereas if we go in and do our own billing. But then I don't
well,
know.
Well, and that would also be a question for Social Security is when that section updates with the last 24 months of earnings, does that also update their records so you can just go in and do a manual submission without pay stubs or anything if, you know, they're
right,
in their
and
outcome.
That's what I do is if I mm-hmm. if it, the person hasn't sent me, like we have people who are quarterly, and one of the quarterly is if they're in outcome, they can put it in writing that they don't want us to contact them on a quarterly basis. They'll contact us if they need something.
Yep.
So
gotcha.
We're still providing services if they want them, but they just don't want to be bothered because they're in outcome 20, 21, 22.
Sure.
So thank you
way-
for that. We're gonna that's something we'll have to take back and see if we have options to make the systems changes that we would need to make. And just as a way to sort of tie this up, you know, and for closure purposes, appreciate
okay.
the input. The, you know, this is, we do have enhancements we'd like to make to the portal. We're aware of some things that would be great additions, but we are always in competition with a finite amount of systems resources, and that's dollars, amongst every competing component within SSA to get those changes made. So, but we are actively engaged to see if we can get onto the waiting list, so to speak, to make the changes in the portal so that input's helpful. We'll go ahead and move into the next question if that's okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Ian, do we
and
have
we'll
another
question? Sorry, yes. We'll take our next question from Paula Valle of Employment Options. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I just want to congratulate everybody for the program and having saved so much money this year. The Ticket to Work program, I heard the OIG report was very positive that we're, you know, the ticket program's working, so that's wonderful. I just still had questions about the COS form. I've tried to get clear, you know, better clear idea, and I know we did you did something on it last month about which, you know, it just doesn't seem to be standardized when we get different replies, and we have clients that are getting disassigned that we've been in contact with. So I just try to get a better idea of what you know, what I'm missing.
Kim, do you have any thoughts on that?
Hi, Paula. So, you know, of course, without looking at the specific cases, you know, I don't want to give too much information, but the general fact of it is whenever you're requesting, you know, for phase one milestone payment, you have to show proof of relationship during that entire milestone range. So if you're submitting pay stubs, you know, then, again, each case will have to be assessed individually. But the purpose of the COS form, if you are unable to provide pay stubs, then you need to provide a list of detailed services that you with dates of services that you provided during that particular milestone period. Again, but if you have cases where you are submitting pay stubs for that milestone period, I would have to look at a case on an individual basis. But just make sure that you're either sending in pay stubs that's going to show proof of relationship during that milestone period, or if you're not submitting pay stubs, then make sure you're completing the cost form and you're listing those services with the dates that you provided them. Thank you.
Thank you. John, do we have questions from the chat?
Yes, we do. Our first question is going to come from Lou Ann, who asks, I may have missed this point. If the ticket holder submits their pay stubs on their own, how does the EN locate the reports to know if they've reported to know if 9 trial work months have been achieved?
I think you should repeat the question.
Yes, let me repeat that again. So if the ticket holder submits their pay stubs on their own, how does the EN locate the reports in order to know and verify that 9 trial work months have been achieved?
This is Heather. I can offer up something that we do. If you want to get a benefits inquiry from the local Social Security office, you need to fill out those 2-3288 releases for your client. And then that will give you not only permission to talk to the local office, but to get that benefits query. And like I said before, this is why I like to get the pay stubs personally, because then I know if they appear to be at trial work level or not just by looking at their wages.
All right.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Our next question comes from Joni Smith, who asks, will our first ePay payment be retroactive?
Will their first payment be retroactive? What we would do with the ePay file, if you have clients that are on the ePay, one, if you're one of the ENs that you are able to, you know, receive payments through ePay, then we go in and your Social Security number or your beneficiary is on the ePay file, we will assess all available payments. So I guess the answer to that will be yes, but just taking into consideration, we will not go back for claim months greater than 24 months.
Thank you, Kim. All right, so we're going to take one or two more questions from Ian.
We'll take our next question from Deborah Tennessee of Maximus. Please go.
Hello, you can skip me. I was going to respond to a question that was asked earlier about the length of time to process payments, but that's already been addressed.
Thank you, Ms. Bev.
Mm-hmm.
Ian?
We will take our next question from Larry Brown of WorkNet. Please go ahead.
We're in the Midwest. Hi, we're in the Midwest, and I was just wondering when ePay might start coming to Midwestern ENs.
We're processing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the ePay file is processed by SSNs and not so it's not segmented out based on a location. It's just based on SSNs.
Thank you, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Ian, one more question.
We appear to have no further questions at this time on the phones.
Thank you. So, Rob.
Well, thank you. A lot of active engagement. We want to thank you for participating and all of the questions. We will follow up next month with the call regarding the second DUNS.
Mm-hmm.
Please express your interest. As a reminder, to send an email to enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, okay? And that's specifically for the second DUNS issue. And I want to thank our participants today that shared a lot of really helpful information. Thank you to Kimberly. We appreciate your help and support. Laura Rodriguez as well was participating and ready to help us out on the phone. Thank you also. And also thanks to Heather Miller, as always, providing very useful and helpful information, particularly to the important topic of benefits counseling to our beneficiaries. And so without further ado, I believe our next call will be we will notify you. How's that? We don't have a date as of yet, but we will certainly notify you of our next call. Thanks again, and have a great remainder of your day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.